We'll be mixing two mediums today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Lance Baker is both an abstract artist and a poet. We'll ask how one discipline informs the other. Then we'll ask Garrison Keillor for the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Lance, which are you? For the most part, are you an artist or a poet, and which came first?
Well, poetry came first. Well, actually, art came first, and then poetry came second. I didn't start writing poetry until I was out of college. I was about 30 years old when I started writing poetry seriously.
And so what happened? I mean, why? Was that an event, or does it
My mother encouraged me to write poetry more. She encouraged me to develop it. And so I started writing more and doing more pieces, and I just had a natural ability for it. It was mm-hmm. free verse. It's very free. It just kind of goes and kind of alternates rhymes and kind of flows. It just flows and goes really well.
Your mother saw some of your poetry and then encouraged you to keep it up, huh?
Yeah, she saw my poetry and. And she, it was all over my room, and she picked all the pieces up and gave them to me. And then she encouraged me to write more poetry.
Did you like poetry when you were back in school?
When I was in school, I wrote a couple pieces, but I didn't really do much
poetry. Did you like poetry that you read and Robert Frost and other poets, or did that even come late?
I didn't get it from reading any other poetry. It just comes to me. It just flows in my mind, and I write it down. It takes less than 5 minutes in most cases, about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I can write on many different subjects. If you gave me a pen and a piece of paper right now and gave me 3 words, I could have a poem for you in a couple minutes. It's just very free and very fast, and I never really have – none of these are second drafts.
But none of that occurred to you before 30 or
– I was concentrating on school at the University of Northern Iowa, trying to get through school, studying political science, and it didn't really occur to me until, not until after I got out of school.
How about painting? When did that start?
Painting is, I started art when I was younger, in grade school, and my mom was a good artist, and my grandma was a very good artist, and my brothers and sisters are good artists, too. And the art... I enjoy it because it's another way to express myself. My paint is very thick, very layered. There's multifaceted layers of paint on each painting. It makes it very thick and very alive, and I want people to feel alive when they see my paintings, and I want my poetry and my paintings to bring joy to people.
Now, you paint abstract. Did you ever do any realistic painting?
Oh, yeah, I've done realistic painting before. I've done a flower arrangement, and I've done... other stuff, and I did a lighthouse in high school, mm-hmm. But I just enjoy abstract.
What turned you on to abstract?
It just feels, I don't know why certain people are attracted to abstract. My favorite artist is Jackson Pollock. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy Jackson Pollock, and I enjoy the freedom of the art and the creation. And thing about abstract, you can look at it and people see different things.
How long does it take you to create, for example, the painting that you brought along today?
This one is a work in progress. It took about a year because I kept painting over and over different things. And this one is how it ended up, and I really like it. You can see the white. You can also see all the other colors transparent underneath.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever... rewrite your poems? I mean, they come in instantly in a minute or two.
I don't usually rewrite my poetry or edit it. It just comes to me, and then.
So what's different about the two mediums?
One is with my voice, and one's visual. But I think they're both expressions of who I am. I'm an abstract person. I like complicated thought, and I like complicated processes.
Why don't you read one of your poems to us?
Okay.
This is from your collection, Escape?
Yes.
Okay. Read one of those for us.
Jet. Hey, hey, hey. It's Thursday. A moment to be clear. I'm here. It's time. Time to rhyme. Full of optimism. I got a plan to leave. Jet this town with no reprieve. Gotta go. Gotta move. Hey, baby, gotta make a living so I can support you. Love you, boo.
Now, that is rap.
Yeah, it's rap, but rap is just poetry put onto a recording, so...
Mm-hmm. Well, so is that accidental? I mean, the world of hip-hop has really taken off recently. But,
No,
but when you were 30, it wasn't all that popular.
No, but I'm not 30 anymore. No, it's not accidental. I enjoy the freedom of this, and if I could ever, I would like to record this into a recording.
But, when you say freedom of it, it does rhyme.
It rhymes.
Right? So...
But those are just things I wrote down that just come to me. I write them down.
They come to you in rhyme.
They come to me in rhyme, yeah. They just come to me.
Now, that's interesting that you would...
They just come.
Just off the spur of the moment, the top of your head, just start rhyming, huh?
Yeah. Somebody told me one time to carry a long time ago, a tape recorder, but I never did, but I just it comes to me, and I write it down, and it's that way,
mm-hmm.
and it just comes really free like that.
It seems to me that when you paint, you keep working on a canvas. You say that's a work in progress. You've been fooling around with it for a year, and yet your poems come out very spontaneously.
Well, one of the reasons I repaint is because sometimes I get bored and I need a new painting. And supplies cost a lot of money, so I just paint over what I had before. Sometimes when you're an artist and you're poor, sometimes you paint over what you had before. And then years later, after you're dead, they go through and if you're lucky enough to be successful, they'll analyze all that. There'll be stuff underneath there. So
you used to draw realistic things, and now you do impressionistic. Do you see anything in your painting, anything specific, or are you just looking to express a mood or a feeling?
Well, you can see different things, but I think right with this one, you want a mood. The mood that I'm expressing in this one is it looks like a frozen ocean,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I just love color, and I love to mess it up as much as I can so it gets as abstract as I can so that people can try to figure out what it is and imagine what it might be.
Now, you publish your own poems?
Yes, I do.
And you use a computer for that?
I have a friend, that types up the poems for me, and then we take them to the printer. And the printer, we take them to a printer, and the printer... We'll put them into these little books.
Where would they be available if somebody wanted to get a copy of?
Well, they could always call me, but I they're not in any bookstores right now. I want to do some more poetry readings. I've done poetry readings in the past at Black Hawk Community College and at Old Mary Crest College and other schools. But I want to do some more poetry readings, so if anybody out there wants me to come and do a poetry reading, just let me know.
Okay, Lance Baker is both an abstract artist and a poet, and I must say the fact that you're writing in hip hop style, you're right on the crest of the wave here because that is extremely popular right now.
Thank you.
Now, we've been talking to Lance Baker, both an abstract artist and a poet. And right now, we're going to be talking or have Garrison Keillor talk to us about the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. I have a book to talk about today, Lowell, but before we do that, our guest in a couple of weeks, Mike McLaughlin, has some book signings for his book Dracula Transformed. That's this afternoon from 1 to 5 at the Book Rack in Davenport, and a week from today from 1 to 3 at Barnes & Noble, also in Davenport. By the way, if we have word on book signings in advance, well in advance, we'll be glad to promote those. But I want to talk about a book. Have you heard of this?
Sapiens? I have. Dan Culver just suggested that as a book to be read. I caught him reading it at Cool Beans the other day.
Yeah, by Yuval Noah Harari. It's called Sapiens. He originally wrote it just a few years ago from Israel, and then it was translated into English. And at the translation, I think in 2014, he updated it, and I think he may have updated it further for publication in this country. It is one of the most remarkable books I've ever read. There's some books I've read in my life that have changed things dramatically.
I remember The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind.
Yeah, that changed everything.
That changed you.
It did. Because it answered so many questions that have been buzzing around in my head for years. And all of a sudden, it made sense. Now, what Harari has done in Sapiens is tell us the story of human beings from the very beginning, when there were six different species or subspecies of humans roaming the earth, and then what he calls the cognitive revolution, how we suddenly became what we are, able to think, self-aware, not wholly in the beginning, but the dawning of consciousness. And he takes us through all that rising from an animal state to what we are. And then he talks about how life changed from hunters and gatherers to the agricultural revolution. And one of his titles of a chapter there is History's Biggest Fraud. That was that really a step forward? And it's an intriguing proposition. Then he goes on to the unification of mankind, how we came to be organized. And he says there are certain fictions that we create that keep us going. And interestingly enough, one of the earliest fictions is money.
Huh.
Money isn't real.
Right.
I mean, it's something we agree on. We agree that these pieces of paper and these coins have value and they're transferable all over the world. That's instead of swapping a load of corn for a wheelbarrow.
Right.
And that when you stop and think of it that way, you think, that's right. There is no real money. I was worried about the phenomenon of Bitcoin, but Bitcoin is just another fiction.
Right.
And then he goes on from there about how we organize ourselves, and how we organize ourselves in society, as nations, and what are the instruments that we use. And he says we create more fictions. But the point he makes through this is that evolution, biological evolution, goes very slowly. And our evolution that brought us to consciousness all of a sudden accelerates. And our old instincts aren't changing rapidly enough to keep up with what we know and what we think. The beauty of this is that he is absolutely objective. He has the latest studies. I read Science News and Science Magazine. He's up on all this. He's up on everything. And when he comes to a point where there is a difference of interpretation, he gives you the different interpretations without judgment. And he writes like an angel. The book, I could not put it down. It took me a couple of days, a couple of evenings to get through this, but it was one of the most enjoyable books I've ever read.
Sounds good.
It is. It is extraordinary. And if you really, if you're curious about things, all my life I've wanted to know everything. I want to know the answers of, you know, life, the universe, everything. It isn't 42, but I don't think I'll ever know, and I don't think any of us will ever know.
No, I mean, it keeps expanding beyond.
Yeah, what does it all amount to? And he gives us, I think, the most fact-based observations on what it is to be human, what it is to be organized in society, the fictions that maintain us, the stories we tell ourselves in the absence of evidence, and what we are learning, and some of the remarkable advances in science that put us on a path that is as dangerous as it is exhilarating. It is a brief history of humankind.
Does he look into the future to see where things might be going?
He has just released some new books on looking at the future, which a review of it I just came across last week says that he recaps a lot of what's in Sapiens. But I'm more interested in what he has done for the past, because speculation about the future is speculation. But what he has done in summarizing human existence on Earth is just staggering. And it's not hard to read. Nothing tough in it. It is just absolutely clear. It's a lucid exposition, and it is not in any sense biased. That's extraordinary.
That is.
It's called Sapiens, and I have a...
You better spell his last name again, however.
Harari, H-A-R-A-R-I, Yuval, Y-U-V-A-L, Noah, you got that one.
Right.
Harari, H-A-R-A-R-I. And it is a book you have a little trouble getting because they're selling pretty fast.
Right.
Published by Harper, and it's worth every penny. It is one of the, for me, one of my basic books now. Right up there with Phenomenon of Man.
All right.
And The Origin of Consciousness.
Fun. Isn't that fun to find a book like that?
Oh, man. That is so much fun.
Yeah.
You're reading a book and you're thinking, this is... You know, I don't know a deeper pleasure. That's the thing about reading. When you read, something enters your mind in a very special way. Writing helps focus you, but reading is right next to that, and being able to focus and absorbing material. Yeah, I just love it. A good book, better than a good meal.
Right.
So, do you have some good books to talk about?
Well, I have one to begin with, and then I've got a list of others. I have been reading over these past few weeks books that people have suggested. But Jan Keeson sent me a copy of a book that just has come out as a movie that I missed in 2011 when it was a bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. Have you heard the reviews
of
that movie?
Yeah.
The movie has generally gotten panned. And add to the panning list would be my daughter and her daughter, our grandson, who also just finished reading this, and they said the book is so much better than the movie that you can't believe it. And my granddaughter is not a person that reads a book all the time. I mean, she's usually on a tablet of some kind. What I intrigue this is it's a fantasy about a home for children hidden away on an island in Wales for peculiar children, that preventing them from being exploited and picked on by other people. What intrigues me about this book, and these children are peculiar, what intrigues me about this book is that it began because Riggs was a collector of those old photographs you find at flea markets from the 1900s that were you know, those old photographs, people looked at photographs really peculiarly then. I mean, there are pictures of people on roofs. There are pictures of people upside down. Photography was having fun being discovered. Mm-hmm. And he had a collection of some 10,000 of these just by going through flea markets and antique stores. And particularly, he was fascinated by the pictures of children. For instance, these photographs are in the book. There's a photograph of a young girl in white standing on the edge of a pond, but there are two reflections of her in the pond. There's another picture of a girl floating in the air. There's another picture of a different girl holding up a boulder with one hand. And obviously trick photography, or a girl with a mouth in the back of her head so she has to eat backwards, lifting up her curls. And one day he said, I wonder what kind of a story I could make if out of these photographs. And gradually he settled on, you know, 40 or 50 of the photographs and started writing a story about where would these children be. And he invented a great character, Miss Peregrine, who can turn into a peregrine falcon at will. And the narrator whose grandfather escaped the Jews, the Jewish Holocaust, and is full of weird stories that the grandfather tells. And the grandfather, in fact, has some of these photographs. And the child doesn't believe me; thinks that these are just being made up by my grandfather. But after the grandfather dies, he decides he's going to go over there and see if he can find that home for peculiar children. And he wonders what's happened. And the whole story begins when this grandson, now grown up as a young man, decides to go over there and find Ms. Peregrine and her children, and does. And it is a marvelous book. There are already two sequels out to the book, which the people I know who have read this. So anyway, this just happened. Jan Keeson sent this to me from Montana. Just happened to be at the same time that the movie is coming out. But I do not intend to see the movie, but people who've seen it say the book is really good.
Okay, we got the about movie, a minute here. If you have any other titles to recommend.
The movie is so-so. I've got a Minnesota book recommended by Sandy Aune, A-U-N-E. He's a mystery writer I've never come across before. He's a Minneapolis writer. I love Minnesota mysteries because I grew up in Minnesota. This is by Kent Kruger. It's called Iron Lake. And his main character in a series of books about this guy is Cork O'Donnell. They live near the Boundary Waters, and it takes place at Christmas. And it's one of those places where the whole town, it does a great job of portraying the conflicts between white culture and the Native American culture in the Boundary Waters. And there are different ways of seeing things. So I would recommend Kent Kruger's Iron Lake.
Okay, very good. Well, Iron Lake, Sapiens, and Miss Peregrine's
Home for Peculiar Children.
Peculiar Children. And this peculiar parable will be back again next week. I'm Don Wood with Roll Tweet. See you next Saturday for another Scribble.